Blog Talk Radio.
The highs, the lows, the middles. It was a show with a lot of middles. I don't want to bury the lead here, but I was very underwhelmed by this show, or properly whelmed, or something. It was there. I didn't go in with great excitement about this one because there wasn't a lot that was announced, and I didn't come out with any more than I put in. But what are you gonna do? They can't all be winners, and maybe I'm wrong, and my co-hosts will tell me why I am. Said co-hosts are as such. Tom Staub.
I am not sure you are wrong, and regarding those announcements, it was notable on social media very shortly before the show that they started pumping out, like, here's what's going to be on it, and this match, and this match, and this match, and they definitely made sure that they let us know just very shortly beforehand. But I am at Tom Staub, and if you follow me, you can get cute little factoids like my recent discovery. I mean, it's right there for anybody to see, but that the number one women's match on the WWE YouTube channel is Kavita Devee versus Dakota Kai from the first Mae Young Classic. It was the most popular YouTube video to come out of that first Mae Young Classic, and now it is up to 55 million views, far surpassing not only any other women's match on WWE's YouTube, but also anything else that was even filmed inside of Full Sail Live. So that's at Tom Staub on Twitter.
Well, there you go. It turns out India, lots of people there. You heard it here, folks. I just discovered that much in the way discovered that video, and much in the way that Columbus discovered America, the thing that was, you know, there. Nate, who are you?
Kelly, you're wrong. Not really. I just wanted to say that you were wrong. I'm at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses, which usually drops on pwtorch.com either Thursdays or Fridays. I don't necessarily think you were wrong. I was a little underwhelmed myself coming into the show. Just like you said, there really wasn't a whole lot advertised for tonight, and kind of felt the same coming out of it. However, I didn't necessarily give anything a miss in my hits and misses. A little spoiler, but wasn't a show that I really came out feeling warm and fuzzy about either.
All right. Well, Nate, you were flirting with disaster there, but it turns out you were kidding. So maybe we'll lengthen your leash today. We will see. Let's talk email. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And several folks did just that. I'm going to start with an email because the email kind of talks about our underwhelming week, even though this particular message was passed along to us 5 days ago. This is from our buddy JB from Detroit. I've been a little disappointed in NXT lately, as I feel their attempts to counter AEW programming have really affected the quality of the show. My first point is on announcements. The last two promised huge announcements by NXT that have been very underwhelming at best. Triple H announcing a takeover and Regal announcing a vacation of the North American title, and the subsequent triple threat angle for the vacated belt fall a little short of huge announcements to me. It feels like hyperbole, which is a very Raw and SmackDown feel. My second point is on the vacation of the North American title to begin with. What was the point of having a double title match only to vacate the NA title a few weeks later? If Regal and Lee knew it wasn't viable to carry both titles, it doesn't make sense to have the match to begin with. It looks even worse in that this was seemingly the main hook to counter the entirety of Fyter Fest. NXT has lost the ratings battle since the Fyter Fest Great American Bash weeks, and I believe that this is because they shoehorned stories that weren't ready to come to fruition quite yet. What are your thoughts? As always, love the show. In many cases, JB, I think you answered your own questions. They did what they did to pop those ratings, and they couldn't sustain them. Do I think it made things even worse? No, because I think they won weeks that they would probably have won. So, yes, they did it to pop a rating that they couldn't sustain. But in doing so, they got a couple of W's that they were probably not going to get if recent history was any indication. I've been surprised at how far it swung back. But But I would say, for one, don't underestimate the popularity of Cody's open challenge and these big names like wrestlers I follow on Twitter but almost never get to see, or other guys who are furloughed in their other companies, Eddie Kingston, these people showing up. That's exciting stuff. That's the good kind of unpredictable, not the throw it at the wall and see if it sticks unpredictable. Tom, any quick thoughts on this?
And then Zack Ryder shows up and it's all down the tubes. I told myself I wouldn't say it, and then I got that perfect opening, that perfect setup, so I had to take it. I think with these sorts of announcements, we have to still be realistic. They can't just blow up kayfabe every single week. So, you know, I personally haven't been disappointed by hearing that there's going to be a big announcement and then hearing what it was. I feel like it's been suitable, and I understand that they are trying to hook me in and then give me information that was going to happen anyway, and they just hyped it up ahead of time. And I feel like the announcements have been sufficient. So I more or less agree with you, though, Kelly. And regarding the double championship thing, I think it's the very basics of, in wrestling, you have to look at the ingredients you have, and the trick. So much of wrestling is just the trick of looking at those ingredients and seeing how you can maximize them, maximize the money, maximize the draw. And there have been, I've been trying to rack my brain on double championship runs since this email came in, and most of them that lasted a long time seem to have taken place, like Seth Rollins holding the WWE Championship in the United States. I mean, the United States title was Nowheresville at that point. So combining them made Seth more of an attraction, and you didn't lose anything. And then I believe they moved that on to John Cena, and that's when the Open Challenge started afterwards. And then you've got stuff like merging the World Heavyweight and the WWE Championship at TLC 2013. And that really was a merger of the belts, so it wasn't really a double championship situation. But the brand split had gone away, and they were able to get some pop out of the visual of people like Orton and Bryan and Cena holding both belts for a while before Brock won in 2014, or SummerSlam 2014, and they just did away with the World Heavyweight Championship. So I feel like those are some exceptions. Other ones, you know, like Becky, that I think they only let her be Becky two belts for like a month, maybe 2 months, something like that. It wasn't a huge stint because there's more to be maximized by having two women's champions. And I feel like that's the case on NXT, that they look at this. And yes, even though I disagree with the exact way that they went about trying to pop that rating, even though they succeeded, in putting popular babyface North American champion Keith Lee up for to become the double champion and rewarding the viewers with that title change. Even though I disagreed with that, I very much like the almost immediate re-splitting of the titles, because there are so many people who can go after a mid-card title on a two-hour NXT program who are already in that North American title mix. So putting them on, having it on Keith Lee and combining those titles is not a maximization of your ingredients. So, yeah.
It's also, I think, worth mentioning that that they're doing some weird stuff here that you wouldn't expect, but basically every company has been doing that in the pandemic. We're seeing companies try things they never would have tried. A lot of things in wrestling have changed. New Japan does not take a lot of risks, and out of nowhere they put their main championship on a guy who had never gotten past the mid card, a guy named Evil. And then on top of that, they announced it's not a championship belt, but it's a championship title where eight guys are in it, and in the first round you're up against somebody and both of you come up with a match stipulation you want, but then fans vote on it, and then you have that match, and the winners of the four are in a four-way, and I think there's another vote on what the parameters of that vote. This is all very non-New Japan stuff. They very rarely do anything with any stipulation, and then there's a winner of that, but then they have to defend that throughout the year, and then whoever's the winner at the end of the year, that's who the yearly winner of that title is. It is the most convoluted thing ever, and they are such a straightforward company, which is just a roundabout way of saying, I think companies that are just, maybe they're all going stir crazy, and they're just trying these things that they would not have tried anyway. Nate, sorry to open a weird can of worms before I throw to you, but anything there?
No, that's totally fine by me. Actually, to be honest, that, like, from everything you were just describing, completely from what I know about New Japan, sounds completely like the opposite of New Japan. So it's definitely interesting. I actually might want to check that out. However, everything you guys just touched on really both those points, I don't really want to harp too much on. The as far as announcements go, like diminishing returns announcements, I was okay with those two announcements, you know, really for a lot of the same reasons that you guys were. In terms of announcements, the one thing that I'm really not huge on is, and I understand why they do this, but, you know, announcing somebody, you know, returning or somebody debuting before they actually debut. And I understand why you hype it up on social media. You want to get people, you know, engaged, and you want to get people to actually watch. But I mean, part of like the mystique and part of just the draw for me when I was, you know, becoming a wrestling fan was, you know, those surprises. Anything can happen in the WWF, you know, and that whole thing, they still sometimes say it a lot less than they used to, but you know, it doesn't really ring true anymore. And I think a lot of those type of announcements can have diminishing returns, at least as far as I'm concerned. I do like to have some element of surprise. It's nice, like I said, it's nice to know to, like, you know, what's coming up and have a little bit of a preview of the show. But sometimes it's just really cool to be completely blindsided, which, again, in the internet era is hard to do, but just be really blindsided by something, which is kind of, you know, hard to come by lately in wrestling. So it'll not really what the email was about, but it was kind of just a little sidebar on announcements that you know, JB got me thinking about. But yeah, other than that, you guys pretty much said everything else I was thinking.
All right. You can call us 515-605-9345. I haven't biffed that in a while. I guess it was time. 515-605-9345. We will go to the lines after we talk main event. Main event was Dexter Lumis versus Finn Balor versus Timothy Thatcher. This went 12 minutes and 17 seconds. This was to find out who joins Bronson Reed and becomes the second person in that ladder match that will be at TakeOver 30 for the vacant North American Championship. And Dexter Lumis won this one. It was kind of a fun finish, I suppose, although the match itself was just kind of a lot of spots and not a coherent story. This was not the match that that Roddy and Reed and Gargano was last week. Not by any stretch. This was, and I apparently knew it because it only got a little over half the time that one got. So Lumis goes over. Thatcher had his finisher on Balor, but Lumis put silence on Thatcher, and Thatcher released the hold because he got KO'd, and that is how the match ended. So Lumis goes into the match, and we've got a very wild card feel so far to the North American ladder match. A couple of guys that you wouldn't be your obvious ones, but this is kind of the level of the guy that I'd like to be there, because this is going to do a lot to elevate guys, whereas most of the other guys here don't need it. I'm a little surprised that Thatcher's not going to move on. I'm also amused that there are three guys on this podcast, so we easily could have guaranteed one of us was right, but we still failed to get this right because Nate and I said Thatcher and Tom said Balor, but instead Lumis moves along and joins Bronson Reed. And we also got one email from Brian Alston. Hello, friends. Thanks to former and some say the best PWT Talks NXT co-host Harley Padgett for providing stats on as early Wednesday, July 29th, North American Championship ladder match participants. Recap of their 2020 win-loss records. Thatcher 4-1, Finn 6-2, Lumis 6-2, Gargano 5-2, Reed 3-4, Strong 3-6. looking at this, why was Reed in the match? I could justify Strong as a former champ. However, I'm happy that Reed is in the ladder match. According to Wikipedia, there will be five wrestlers in the ladder match. By the way, funny how Triple X doesn't mean what it used to. When I was a kid, if I told my mom I wanted her to pay for to order pay-per-view TakeOver Triple X, she would have smacked me on the side of my head. Question, name three wrestlers that should be in the final match. This includes tag team wrestlers. Cough, Kyle O'Reilly, cough. I'm hoping the finest will be there. Thanks for reading and take care, Brian Alston. I would love to see Kyle O'Reilly in that match. We'll talk about Kyle O'Reilly a little bit later when we talk Undisputed Era. I would love Kona Reeves to be in that match, but at this point I would not expect him even to be in one of the qualifiers, although there's still six people we don't know of that will be in those qualifiers. Brian, as for people saying that Harley was the best, I will refer to the fact that often I would throw a big question to him and he'd be like, no, I don't really have anything. I love that guy and I miss him. Tom, on Dexter Lumis winning, I know you got something to say.
Harley was the best. Harley's the best. And he still is on the Tuesday Daily Cast. It was weird, man. I mean, it is a second week in a row of Lumis translating better for me overall, and the update to his entrance theme definitely helps that. And I don't even really know why. Last week I credited Killian Dane in particular, and now it's running through my mind that I forgot last week to mention that for as good a job as Killian Dane was doing, Dexter Lumis didn't notice when Killian Dane had acted, you know, had done his part in passing out in the hold. So then when the ref was about to call it, Lumis like wrenched the hold in some more. So Dane was like, oh, we're still doing this. Okay, I guess I have to act like I'm passing out again. So the dots are still connecting, but Lumis has definitely benefited from the opponents that he's had for sure. Having him go forward. Yeah, indeed. I was all in on Finn to go all the way to the title with this one, just because I feel like that is the best business decision right now, to finally capitalize on what they've had with having Balor back in NXT. And that is something that I say very objectively, because as I've said many times, I find Balor to be boring, but I know I am in the minority there. And he is one of the wrestlers, if not the wrestler on the roster, that appeals most to the people who watch so many other former Bullet Club members over on AEW. So just put the strap on the guy. Said, I do like that they seem to be building. This is two wins in these triple threats and two guys who were in the breakout tournament. So they really are building like a breakout ladder match. And I'm not crying foul just because one of them of the five is somebody who I've been pretty down on. It's weird that Balor lost, but and Reed to Alston's questions, Reed getting in to the triple threat. When I was looking up and down the rosters, as I do every single week to answer emails, trying to think of three people that haven't made it in yet that I think should fill out the other three spots, I was surprised that I was finding so few options that made sense. Like, sure, there are people that I would like to throw in there, but I Kushida was one that came to mind. And then I was like, well, no, he kind of has this lingering issue with Phantasma, and it seems like he's really, like, he's definitely cruiserweight division right now, and you probably don't want to pop him up right now. So there are things like that where I sensibly talked myself down from just going ahead and saying Kushida. But yeah, I think that's just part of the reason why you're seeing Reed is I don't want to say lack of options, because we're talking about five triple threat matches here. So that's a lot of people. But when you are talking about that many and filling up those spots, yeah, you start to have to look at people like Reed. You're looking at the stats. Obviously, Reed was in there because they wanted him to go over, but that's when you're trying to look at it from a number standpoint, I think you can still justify it just due to the other people that are out there. But the other ones I came to, the obvious one is Damian Priest, and that we got confirmation that he's going to be in a match. Oh, and we learned who his opponents are going to be as well. I wanted to put Cameron Grimes in there, but I also thought at the time that I was thinking about this, I was thinking that you would probably want to put Priest and Grimes in the same match so you can continue that issue. But now that we know that that's not the case, I think the two options with this match are you have to put Priest in this ladder match because I feel like he is on the rise. And you don't want to take that opportunity away from him unless you were redirecting it deliberately toward another equally focal situation, like finding some way to screw him out of the win and move him into a different feud. The other person I look to, of course, is Ridge Holland. Who we might talk about a little bit more later, but I've had a high opinion of him for a while. Actually, we have going back to the Justin James days. I know he was another Justin James favorite. I think he was anyway. So yeah, that would continue that sort of like breakout theme. And then did I say the other people? I guess the other one I'm thinking is the same one that I was thinking last week is Gargano, and he got a strong win tonight. And that wordplay. He got a strong win tonight, and I think that there will be a last chance sort of situation where he'll find his way back in.
Yeah, if there's a last chance, I'd be surprised if it is not Gargano. Otherwise, I'm going to say I think Priest and Grimes will end up in the same match anyway. My other three would be Priest, Grimes, and Kushida. But I don't know if Kushida is ready to come back. Just don't know what's up with Kushida. It seems like I never do. Nate, main event.
So, this definitely was not the triple threat match from last week. That said, I still enjoyed it, but it really wasn't the same, you know, same type of a match that we saw last week. It was good, you know, and like we were talking about earlier, or you know, you guys were talking about earlier, you know. None of us picked Dexter Lumis to win this match. He kind of seemed like he was probably the one that really didn't had the least chance to win. At least going into it anyway. Balor, you know, being Finn Balor, I mean, you know, being a main roster star, coming back down to NXT, you know, he's probably the biggest draw in that match there. Timothy Thatcher, I mean, he's been, you know, getting a lot of. You know, a lot of time on TV, big push. You know, he was in the fight pit rather with Matt Riddle. So I kind of felt like he had a little bit of a like skin in the game, and you know, probably that's why I picked him last week. I thought he was going to win. Lumis, now granted, you know, he's also been getting quite a bit of TV time and, you know, kind of flirting with the main event scene. But as we've talked about, he just hasn't really seemed like a main event level guy, North American level, you know, sure. But I just felt like Thatcher and Balor both kind of had higher star power or higher potential for this match than Lumis. But all of that said, after Lumis won, I started thinking about it, and I kind of think it started making a little bit of sense. Balor doesn't necessarily need the win, you know, or be in. He doesn't even need a title for that matter. He's going to be, you know, a star in the NXT brand no matter what. Thatcher, he could also eat the loss right now. He's got the whole Thatch can, you know, shtick going on. You know, I'm sure those vignettes, probably, you know, they might come back. But you know, he's got that he can fall back on. Lumis isn't really doing anything right now. Yeah, you know, he just finished up his angle with the Undisputed Era, Roderick Strong specifically, and you know, he hasn't really been. He's kind of been having some, you know, one-off feuds the past few weeks, but you know, really not anything major of note. So I kind of at least talked myself into believe, you know, why it kind of made sense anyway. I don't know. I kind of talking about some of the people that we might think, you know, that I think I'd like to see in this match. Your Priest is one we've all talked about. We've all mentioned at this point. He was top of my list. I have a feeling Priest is probably going to go over next week in that triple threat. You know, the one caveat is obviously the NXT US debut of Ridge Holland. So that does kind of throw a little bit of a wrench into my prediction, because a lot of times the debuting star doesn't necessarily lose their first match. But, you know, again, a lot of times it's also not a triple threat. So we'll see, but I'm kind of leaning towards I'm kind of leaning towards Priest, but I'm thinking, there's definitely a possibility that Ridge Holland might squeak one out and, due to some interference or something like that. But other people that, answer one part of Brian's question, a couple of people that, I would like to see, make their way into this. One of them, obviously said Damian Priest. Another one that I think kind of makes sense if we're able to get him here is Pete Dunne. Now, granted, Pete Dunne, he wasn't in the North American title scene, but he, was the NXT champion. He had to tag team champion rather, had to relinquish the title to Timothy Thatcher. So I think, if Thatcher was able to get into, if Thatcher was able to get a last chance into this match or something like that, that would be a kind of a cool angle to put into this. But even if not, he was a champion that lost his title, and this would kind of be, I feel like he could at least make his case to say, hey, I didn't lose my title. Riddle's now up on the main roster. So come on, give me a shot at another title. I feel like he could make a case for that. And then this one, I don't really feel like it can make a strong case for, but I like it. So I'm going to say it. Shane Thorne. Shane Thorne, he came back for a couple weeks, seemed to be getting put in a pretty strong position. And then we haven't seen him. And I don't personally remember hearing anything about, injuries or anything like that. We haven't really seen him on TV. So, and I liked what he was doing. I liked what, he's kind of debuting a little bit of a new character, sort of. I mean, kind of continuing from the breakout tournament, if I'm not mistaken, but, you're still kind of a new character for him. And I liked that. I don't think he necessarily did anything of note to deserve a spot in that match, but like Tom said, looking through the roster, there's kind of not a lot that makes sense. And Shane Thorne just kind of stuck out as somebody that I liked that they were doing with him, but we haven't seen him in a while. And then the last part of Brian's question, why Reed? Is kind of really that is, looking through the roster, I don't really see many people that make sense. Very, just like what Tom said, I feel like Bronson Reed, just because of his build, his body size, and the way that he works, yes, he's been kind of, up until he won his match last week, he's been kind of defined as, either a jobber or kind of an undercard talent. But I feel like because of his size and what he can do in the ring, the way he can move in the ring for somebody his size, if you build him right, he could certainly be a pretty strong contender. So I feel like that, even though his win-loss record wasn't necessarily stellar, I feel like right now that it kind of just made the most sense, probably behind the scenes anyway, for a kayfabe reason. I can't really come up with one. But, real life COVID era reasons, that seems to make the most sense anyway.
All right. You can call us 515-605-9345. Let us go to the lines. We're going to talk to Darrell from Georgia and see what he thought about this week's show. I am trying to get him on the show, but Darrell, do I have you?
Yes, sir.
All right, there he is. What'd you think of this week?
It was an underwhelming show, like you guys said, and I think it was a building show. But it had some interesting parts, and you could see what they're trying to go to and things like that. So that's what my question is going to be focused on today. My first question for you guys, first a comment. I like the main event, and I know I told you guys I thought it was going to be this North American title ladder match was going to be all new people. I didn't know it was really going to be totally all new people and trying to crown a new star, because my pick and the winner of the whole thing just went out the gate with Timothy Thatcher. So that killed me. Yeah. But going to my question, we just seen Roderick Strong lose tonight, and then we seen the Undisputed Era come back out there in attack, which I think this could be one of two things. It could be a reframing of the Undisputed Era, and where they'll be going to some tweener type of role, kind of babyface, but tweener role, and they capture the tag team titles, which is next week, and stuff like that, and come back. Or this could be the writing off of the Undisputed Era, keeping them heel, and we see them come up in SummerSlam to attack one of the two champions, probably the champion on Raw, Drew McIntyre. What do you guys think? And if it is one of the two, how do y'all feel about that? Wait.
Okay, so the Undisputed Era, there's a whole lot to unpack right now. The only one we've been getting on TV in a wrestling capacity is Roddy. And he did the job here, and he did the job last week in the Triple Threat. And then we had this scene backstage with Kyle O'Reilly and his gloriously stupid faux hawk trying to pump up the other members of Undisputed Era, almost to a point where I was like, is this the seed for dissension? And does Kyle turn? But I know that we're always thinking, we're always predicting this breakup that doesn't happen. But the framing of Undisputed Era is interesting because Roddy and Cole have been getting these kind of tweener reactions from the crowd. And this crowd, as you know, is totally curated. They're told what to do. And it seems like we're kind of getting a tweener reaction for Undisputed Era. Undisputed Era charges at Imperium, the tag team champions, to prove something. And I would say that this is to set up matches with Imperium, but the other two members of Imperium may not be able to get here because of the travel ban. And we know that Walter is not looking to travel more often than he has to. So not sure if that's going to be a return to these two factions against each other, or if this was just a one-off and this was just to set up the match next week, because as we know, next week we are getting a championship match, Imperium versus Undisputed Era. I find it amusing that Regal had a video where he said he wouldn't be bullied into making championship matches, but 10 seconds after Undisputed Era charges Imperium, he makes that championship match, but whatever. So we had that, and then in addition to that, we have the really weird Adam Cole and Pat McAfee feud. A couple of people emailed about that. One was JB, who said, I'm not sure if you've been keeping up with the Cole McAfee Triple H angle that's been going on Pat McAfee's podcast, but where do you think it's going? Cole was a guest on the McAfee Show 2.0 and left in a cursing-induced tirade. Triple H was on this week and invited McAfee on NXT to have a discussion with Cole. I'm honestly kind of curious where this goes. As always, love the show. Kevin Catani says, I thought this was a mix of great wrestling and story building. I particularly loved the interaction between Dakota and the newly bleached blonde Rhea. Firstly, what do you all make of the Adam Cole appearance on Pat McAfee's show? I immediately assumed it was a work, but then wrestling Twitter had me think it was a shoot. What side of the coin do you all sit on? Secondly, I have strong suspicion that we'll be getting some kind of curveball in this North American title build. That said, what do you all think it could be? Thanks as always. Stay safe. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. The curveball they're going to throw us is probably some kind of last chance match, which isn't really a curveball because that's what they usually do in these things. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they do. And that way they only had to use up 12 guys instead of 15. And we're all overthinking who might be added to this match. As for whether it's a work or a shoot, it is all the way a work. I figured work anyway, but then I saw the video for the first time when they played it on the show today and found myself very amused that people thought this was a shoot because Adam Cole's got a good intensity, but an actor he ain't. And he was doing his usual level of acting, which is to say, this is a work. Anyway, on the whole Undisputed Era saga, Tom.
The other tip off is that McAfee is challenging him on the fact that he has won so many of his matches due to the help of the Undisputed Era, which is not something that would be brought up on a shoot podcast. So yes, work, but a very, very successful one because due to the fact that they were willing to play, I mean, yeah, they're working with Pat McAfee, who obviously has a relationship with WWE, in particular NXT, but they're still working outside the general bounds of NXT, which is more compelling and does bring it more into the social media reality of our daily lives in 2020. So this was the talk of Twitter town when it happened. So, you know, success there. It got everybody talking, everybody intrigued. When I first watched the footage, the immediate thing that occurred to me was, oh, this is the Adam Cole babyface turn. And part of the reason I say that is, well, you know, just that intensity and standing up to McAfee. I know McAfee, when he's standing next to Sam Roberts, is the most popular guy in the room on the pre-shows for TakeOver. But I think when questioned in particular about his size, is something more to cheer for. And added to the fact, that's just how I interpret it, added to the fact that I know NXT's identity has been shifting, but a lot of what they have done with certain acts that they seem to believe in but haven't gotten called up yet is try to put them in different situations. Like you look at Asuka skewing heel toward the end of her title run, going up against that whole, like, the sun sets, the moon rises type thing that they did with Ember Moon. Maybe, you know, I've got 8 years back on the mind on the VIP side of things, but I'm really, really enjoying what we're seeing out of Leo Kruger, and they turned him into Adam Rose, which is a completely different kind of thing. So I feel like part of what NXT has done historically is take promising acts and try to showcase what they can do, even if it's not something that they will end up doing, just to show that they have that. They also seemed to, I'm trying to think of other examples, like Aleister Black, they had him cutting promos, which is not, which wasn't his strength, and now he's okay at it. Very good, in fact. But yeah, so I feel like turning babyface, what I'm really building to is, like, you've got the babyface thing, but the main thing that set Cole off was being accused of being short. And that is the albatross that has been hanging around him. I every single time anybody, including myself, talks about how great Cole is and how much of a moneymaker he could be for WWE, the thing is, like, oh, but will Vince believe in him because he's short? So addressing that openly in this sort of, like, maybe showcase mode of NXT, of Adam Cole's NXT career, could be a deliberate way putting that out in the open and just saying, listen, this is not an issue with this guy. He wrestles above what height he is. It's fine. So there's that. And then, yeah, I think it's weird to finally be talking about something that feels like a concrete Undisputed Era face turn. And it's like the third from the top thing on the show. And it's not even the first thing that I'm talking about when pitched to talk about it. It just feels like the tip-offs are that they are up against heels. Imperium, clear heels. Johnny Gargano, clear heel. And the tip-off from last week, and I'm not sure, I would be very curious to learn, although we never will, in what order these matches were taped, since last week and this week were taped at the same taping. Because last week, Kelly noted, I didn't notice it, but you noted that Roderick Strong was cheered on his way to the ring by the paid crowd that are told what to do. And as every other item in Whole Foods is, lightly sweetened. So it's deliberate to cheer Roderick Strong here. And that happened again this week. And then you've got, it just feels like, okay, this is the Undisputed Era face turn, even though there's no real reason for it other than fans want to cheer for them anyway. So now just lean into it, which is something that I can compliment. Although with a big act like this, I feel like you would want a dramatic, and maybe that's not even an option during the pandemic era. And they're just like, screw it. Cole lost the title. We're moving into a new phase. This is the Undisputed Era refresh. This is the Adam Cole refresh. So we're just going to do it. It's definitely a thumbs up for me, and I'm definitely optimistic about it. But yeah, it's not something that I expected to just be like a third from the top item on any given week.
Yeah, it seems like it's done, but it's really soft. And they do soft turns, and I'm in favor of some people turning soft. Didn't think that would happen with UE. I don't know that I'm against it. That's hard to say until it plays out, but it's not
how I would have guessed that they would go. I thought that it would be a big move, a big thing, a big idea. And I thought it was, I thought that Karrion Kross was going to be that big idea. And then they moved away from Cross Cole, which it seemed like they were on a collision course for in the not at all out of nowhere Keith Lee title change. Nate?
No, not out of nowhere whatsoever. No, I pretty much agree with everything that you guys are just talking about. So, you know, kind of talking about, you know, Undisputed Era tonight, you know, I did obviously notice that Roddy did get he got cheered tonight coming out. I didn't notice it last week either. You know, when Kelly brought it up, it was the first time I kind of came to my attention. But I did go back and I looked, and yeah, you know, he definitely did get cheered. So I mean, this definitely feels like it is some sort of a turn for them. And I kind of do lean into the fact that we're in this current COVID era, no crowd and all that. It is kind of hard to, you know, make this a big thing. So maybe that's why they're trying to do this, you know, in the way that they are, and it's just a little more subdued in the way that they're, you know, kind of turning the Undisputed Era. At least that's the only thing I can think of, because you know, it just seems to make the most sense. It's what a kind of a lot seems to be riding on lately is this whole COVID thing, and you know, the changes not only to daily life, but you know we're here to talk about wrestling, just you know, talking about or changes to the, you know, to the wrestling scene in general. So you know, that seems to make the most sense to me anyway. You know, the whole Adam Cole, Pat McAfee angle, I will admit, for the first, when I first saw the clip, I bought it. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. Not going to lie. I was one of those idiots that fell for it. And then, like, about maybe 20 minutes later, give or take, I saw another video that showed a lot more of the clip. And I was like, oh, okay. No. I was wrong. So, you know, I can certainly see why there is a lot of debate and a lot of talk right now on Twitter on, you know, whether or not this was, you know, a legitimate blow up that Adam Cole had, or if, you know, if it was work. But yeah, now clearly work, you know, for a lot of the reasons that you guys just brought up. I'm, you know, I'm not going to rehash all of that. You know, I am interested to see what happens with Undisputed Era. I don't think they're destined for the main roster yet. I think they're going to get there. Selfishly, I want to see them stay in NXT, but you know, I think they will get to the main roster. I just don't think it's right now, or leading up to SummerSlam. Could be wrong, but I think they still have a few more things to do here. You know, which is kind of hard to say because they did, you know, they held every title. They've pretty much done everything. But I don't know. I feel like they are just such a staple in NXT that moving them up to Raw or SmackDown is going to overall hurt NXT. I just don't feel like that's a move that they want to do at the moment.
I'm not convinced that there is any plan to move them anytime soon. I think they're total anchor for the group.
I feel like Undisputed Era, Gargano and Ciampa, I feel like they are kind of cemented in NXT.
Yeah, and Gargano and Ciampa want to stay there, so
right.
That helps. All right, Darrell, what else did you see this week?
Yeah, another thing that I wanted to ask and talk to you guys about were, I think we finally got a promo for Keith Lee to be able to come up off of. I like the promo that he gave. I like the intensity. Even though they X'd out the Bull S out of it. But I like everything he did about it. And I felt like the beginning show promo video that they did so much for that feud that it didn't make it, that it just would go unnoticed to most people, because that did so much in how they played everything together and made it look serious. And by having Keith Lee come out there and break from his usual tone and how he talked and everything and get serious and angry, like an angry big man, I loved it. And I also liked when William Regal came and said, I'm not going to let y'all take over my show. And title matches have to be earned. And we've seen that with some of the matches that they set up next week, like the number one contenders match that I'm going to ask y'all a question about later. But I like that, and that added more to it. What did you guys think?
So the opening with the Keith Lee, Karrion Kross feud, set to they dusted off the song that Jim Johnston wrote for Judgment Day some years back called The End. It is definitely kind of a Doors sound alike. It's kind of dark and moody and really befitting of a guy like Kross and his feuds. I think this was a really well used song. It was a perfect one to dust off for this situation. And then with the segment with Lee and Grimes and Scarlett, and then the segment with Regal, all this stuff was my favorite stuff on the show. I thought that Lee continued to come off well as he spreads his wings and isn't just the confident slash cocky guy that's sniffing the air and talking about how he's limitless. Putting him in this situation, having him forced to put in difficult situations with Dominik Dijakovic, having Kross call him out on it, and then still getting to be his dominant self because Cameron Grimes is used in this way. Listeners know that I love Cameron Grimes. He is one of my favorite acts, and today was just another exhibit as to why. He's hilarious. He's so annoying. And he's so good at just being relentlessly annoying. Tried to do the cave in, got spirit bombed immediately, just totally got destroyed. I don't know if this will hold him down, but I mean, this is the kind of reason. It seems like this or why Heath Slater had a job for many, many years. Now, Heath Slater's a nice wrestler. Cameron Grimes is a wonderful wrestler, so hopefully this isn't just where he's going to slot, even if it means he gets a job for longer. And I'd be interested to hear his take on that. But anyway, Lee Grimes, Scarlett Kross, I thought that was good. I really, really liked the touch of Regal saying, I'm not giving you this match just because you want it, just because you bullied me into it. It has to be earned. I love that touch. We could easily assail that by using proof of times where he was bullied into something, but whatever. It was good in the confines of this show, Tom.
Let's see. Yeah, I like that touch from Regal as well. And I like that they have, I believe this is the second time they've used The End Is Here for Kross in a video package. And I like associating that with him, kind of like that Poppy song, even though it's not her entrance theme. Io Shirai has had that one Poppy song in a couple of her video packages. It's like a neat signature idea. They're doing a fine job of making this really legitimately feel like the top program, even if I'm still adjusting to the fact that it is a reality after having my feet in the mud so much about it going to Kross Cole. So even though like Keith Lee isn't like my favorite wrestler in the world or anything, I always talk about how he has a genuine star quality about him, and that's always the phrase that I use. And part of what I mean when I say that is that he feels like there's just a different aura when he enters the room and the way the crowd reacts to him, and he feels like a guy who you could build NXT around, and who when he comes out it feels like his show. And that's one of the things that I've appreciated most of the past 2 weeks since the title win. That opening celebratory promo where he brought out Dijakovic, and or as we had the conversation about his last name last week, but Lee himself was saying Dijak this week, his Christopher Dijak's real name. I think it's Chris. So that, and even the promo from behind the desk announcing that he was relinquishing the North American title, both of those, it is the usual, you know, nose in the air, limitless thing, but it's legitimized now being the top champion, that I do feel that even without real fans in the arena, he has succeeded in making it feel like this is his NXT now, even though him winning was out of the blue. I feel like that's been a success early on in this Keith Lee run. So seeing something like this, it was an effective segment. It's ultimately a thumbs up because I do, as I said at the top of this, it's part of the fine job that they're doing in making it genuinely feel like the top program that you are mainly tuning in to see on Wednesday night here. But it's reverting back to the Keith Lee who was addressing Damian Priest, heel Damian Priest, Keith Lee who was just like angry all the time. And of course it's justified, but, it's not, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't complain because I got two weeks of Keith Lee that I've been looking for all along. And at least he's still talking directly into the camera as I have so often suggested he do. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm nitpicking more. It was just like, oh man, Keith Lee's all pissed off again. I was liking it when he wasn't.
Nitpicking is what you're for, Tom.
That's, yeah, I suppose so. Because it is ultimately a thumbs up, and of course he should be pissed off right now. So,
yeah. Yes, indeed, Nate, take it away.
Yeah, no, I think personally I like this kind of Keith Lee. You know, this like more intense side of Keith Lee tonight. Tom was just saying, we've seen it in the past. It hasn't always worked, but tonight it for me anyway it worked. Especially in this particular context, with that opening video package that they started with tonight, because Keith Lee, that wasn't right after, that was in the middle of the show. But the opening video package they had tonight, it really was a great look at the whole dynamic between Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic, the rivalry turned friendship and all that turned bromance. Then now this whole thing with Karrion Kross and, it really kind of did get across why Keith Lee should have a hair across his ass. He should be pissed off. He should be upset. I think he got that point across tonight. I don't think he's the greatest promo in the world. But I thought it was, for Keith Lee, I think it was believable. I could still kind of sense some of that Keith Lee acting there, but, for him, I liked it. I liked what he was doing. The whole Cameron Grimes thing tonight, I like it in the fact that Cameron Grimes was able to show off, exactly what you were just talking about, Kelly, kind of his comedic value and just his overall value to the roster. But at the same time, I'm like, I feel like they could have achieved everything in that segment that they did without needing to kind of quote sacrifice Grimes. And I know, it's not necessarily a sacrifice because he's coming out and he's being all cocky and stuff and kind of, calling out somebody that's probably a little bit above his league. I get that. But at the same time, I feel like they've kind of just been building him up to be, a bit more of a star than somebody to just kind of get squashed by the champ like that. So I don't know. That's the only part of the segment that I'm a little torn on. I liked it because it was, I'm right there with you with Grimes, really high on Grimes. So, obviously you just like to see him on TV. I liked that we were able to see his character work, but I'm just like, I feel like they could have done everything in that angle, without needing to, kind of make Grimes look stupid. Other than that, I was, pretty much on board. I think this was also my favorite part of anything involving this angle tonight is probably my favorite part of the show. Scarlett, I really like the whole just Scarlett showing up kind of as a message to everybody, like Karrion Kross is nearby. He's watching. She has this. She's kind of just got this presence about her, and it's obviously the presentation and all of that. But I mean, tonight, just that striking red gown that she was wearing, silhouetted against just the blackness of the arena as the lights went out. And obviously, I mean, she's stunning in and of herself. So it's just a really, I just really like that presentation. You know, lights go out, you see this you know, you see this gorgeous woman kind of show up on stage, and you know, that's not good. That's not good. We have this monster coming. And, you know, I really like that piece and that dynamic of this, the duo of Cross and Scarlet. So really thumbs up all around for me here. You know, I think I am missing out on the whole Karrion Kross, Adam Cole thing. I had my sights set on that match, and I think that would have been a cool match just to watch, but, you know, we're not getting it. That's okay. And, you know, I think Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, which that match doesn't nearly excite me as much as Adam Cole and Karrion Kross. I still think should be a battle of two big men. And, you know, hopefully, I've got the confidence in them. They should be able to pull it off and pull off, you know, a pretty good match. So looking forward to it.
All right, Darrell. Was there anything else?
Bob, though. Hello? Yes, sir.
Yep.
Now, my third question would be to you guys about the Dakota Kai them tag team match and Dakota Kai requesting the number one contender match with Rhea Ripley. I like where it's going. And also, I want to tangle in Mercedes Martinez with it because I think she will play a role after that match, whoever loses, and get a match with them on the TakeOver match. And I like what she did in her match also. How did you guys like those two matches and the setup for that next week?
All right, two women's matches this week. First of all, Io Shirai and Tegan Nox go over Dakota Kai and Candice LeRae. Lo and behold, Tegan shows a little personality and comes in, and she gets LeRae back for some of her misdeeds. And she does the shiniest wizard when the ref is looking away. Very heelish way of winning, but the Tegan LeRae program has kind of earned it. So what are you going to do? Io pins LeRae in 12 minutes and 58 seconds. We also got Shotzi Blackheart against Mercedes Martinez. Martinez primarily dominating most of the action, 4 minutes, 21 seconds. And some of this did hinge on an early distraction by Robert Stone and Aaliyah, but Mercedes, for the most part, just took care of business. Shotzi continues to be in this really weird spot, much like Cameron Grimes, where she gets pushed for a while, suddenly finds a new glass ceiling, and she's stuck. So the women got about 17 and a half minutes. There were 54 minutes plus on this week. I agree with you, by the way. I do think that Mercedes will loom large in this match. I know they don't do a lot of screw jobs like this, but it really does seem like they're going toward Dakota Kai and Io Shirai. And I think the only way we get that is if Mercedes Martinez goes toward Rhea Ripley, which makes perfect sense because Rhea Ripley is more or less in a feud with Robert Stone. So I think that we end up getting two women's matches on NXT TakeOver 30, and that's what we get. Mercedes over Shotzi, basic stuff, but very enjoyable. Nothing wrong with the tag match, although nothing I would remember if I didn't have to talk about the show afterward. Tom?
Mercedes already a badass. Her new presentation was already badass, and now having Aaliyah and Stone follow her out and basically seem like her lackeys. Like, there's no doubt in that presentation who's in charge. I really, really like that. I think it's just a great visual for Mercedes. Stone got involved a little bit, but Mercedes is still running the show. So I definitely like that. I never would have paired Stone and Mercedes up together, but only one week in, and I have hopes. The tag match, Tegan and Candice, even though Candice is somebody that I still feel like you can pop up to a number one contender spot pretty much anytime you want, Tegan and Candice feel very, very tertiary, but that didn't affect this because most of what we got was Dakota and Io duking it out in the ring, and their chemistry is awesome. I loved this was my favorite part of the show was Dakota and Io in there together. The stuff that they were doing was awesome. I liked how they played off of each other. And yeah, I like Ripley coming back in. Of course, this is the angle that she should be taking, realistically, coming back in. And it just leaves me predicting yet again that women's fatal four-way that we never seem that we always predict but never seem to get a takeover between Io, Dakota, Rhea, and Mercedes. I believe I had already been saying that because I don't want Dakota to lose a title challenge so soon into Io's run right now. But now I know who the other two players would be.
And yeah, she's going to lose that match, but she's going to lose it on TakeOver. So that's something.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So yes, makes me sad as well, but what are you going to do, Nate?
Yeah. So I would definitely agree that the Dakota Kai Io stuff was the best part of this match. I'd say might even be some of the best wrestling on the show. Although we haven't talked about it yet, but I really like Swerve and Jake Atlas. It was a solid tag team match. I got to give it that. It was definitely enjoyable to watch, but yeah, it wasn't, wasn't anything to necessarily write home about either. Certainly advanced to two different rivalries going on there. I'm cool with it. I definitely got to give Tegan Nox some props for showing a little more personality tonight. Both in storming out of the back, to help out help Io Shirai out after she got attacked by Kai before the match even started, but also just kind of some of the fire that she showed throughout the match, and then the way that they were able to pick up the win. So that certainly was nice to see. The Shotzi Blackheart and Mercedes Martinez match. I like this. I actually like this a lot. Now, Shotzi, obviously, I've been very high on Shotzi ever since she debuted. I love her look. I love the gimmick. Yeah, I do think she goes over the top a little bit every once in a while. Especially like last week, and she's screaming, "Show me or welcome to the ball pit," over and over again, which was kind of weird. But overall, I'm really high on Shotzi. However, this was probably the first match that she's been in, at least that I could remember, where I gave her literally a 0% chance of winning. There was no chance that she was going to come out of this victorious. With Mercedes Martinez obviously debuting recently, I think this is actually really her first non-squash match. I forget what her first match was now that I think about it, but I think it was her first match under the Robert Stone brand anyway. And I really, really like that pairing. I've gone from kind of despising the Robert Stone brand to going completely all in on the Robert Stone brand. I feel like it's so stupid that it's amazing. And I feel like, just Robbie, he's playing that Robert Stone character perfectly. I get the character now. I didn't necessarily get it when it debuted, but I get it now. And I love it. It's that same stupid humor that my friends and I have. No, it's not ever going to be a main event act. He's not going to be, managing any main event people, but, it's certainly a draw for me anyway, lately in NXT. So, I really like this pairing with Mercedes Martinez. As Tom said, I would never in a million years would have thought to put Robert Stone with Mercedes Martinez. I think if somebody would have came up to me and said, "Hey, why don't we put Robert Stone, Mercedes Martinez?" I would have probably laughed in their face. It just did not seem like anything that made sense. However, in practice, I like it. Also, as Tom said, it is very clear who is in charge in that relationship there. Aaliyah and Robert Stone, they basically bow to Mercedes Martinez right now, and that's okay. I feel like that works with their characters just so well. It works. It just works very, very well for me. I like Aaliyah in the spot that she's in. I feel like she's adding, and I know we've got an email. We'll talk about Chelsea Green in a little bit, but she's kind of adding where Chelsea Green left off. I feel like Aaliyah just basically came in and just picked up exactly where Chelsea Green was, but maybe like almost a notch down because she's not getting the mic time necessarily that Chelsea Green was. But as far as Aaliyah, it's certainly the most prominent she's been in quite some time anyway, if not ever. Overall, with everything we saw in the women's scene tonight, certainly thumbs up. Wasn't anything, again, nothing to write home about. But, there was one thing that I did want to bring up with Shotzi and Mercedes. Kelly, you brought up that, Shotzi's kind of one of those that just she gets pushed and she seems to kind of hit a glass ceiling. Where I definitely do agree with that, I feel like at least she was able to get some offense tonight on Mercedes. And it wasn't just a straight up squash. And there were a few times where, she was able to outsmart Mercedes. I feel like just with Mercedes' reputation, coming into NXT and her presentation, since she's been here, it was kind of a foregone conclusion she was going to win anyway. But Shotzi got some of that offense in, and she still looked good. It wasn't, it wasn't just a total squash. So I walked away from this like thinking, obviously, much higher of Mercedes Martinez in terms of, her position on the card. But I didn't really feel like Shotzi took too much of a blow here simply because it would be kind of like going up against, like Brock Lesnar or Shayna Baszler or Ronda Rousey or, somebody of that caliber. I feel like that's, Mercedes Martinez is being built up to be kind of there, maybe a notch below it, as we've talked about. I don't know if she's necessarily going to brush the main event, but that gatekeeper role where you hear Mercedes Martinez is going to, you're going to be going up against her, and I'm going to be in for a long night. I just wanted to mention that. I feel like even though Shotzi did lose tonight, and I agree, she's kind of been going up and down. They've kind of toyed around with her a little bit. I don't feel like she lost too much tonight. Correct me if you think I'm wrong, but at least that was the way I walked away with it.
I don't know. I don't know if she did or not. I feel like she's definitely being defined firmly in the middle at this point, even though right. It seemed like they were going to slot her higher when they had her win those four matches at the beginning of that second chance gauntlet and then get beat by Dakota Kai. It just seemed like maybe they were going to move her that way. So I don't know. I'm not upset by her being that way, being that spot on the card. She's no great shakes on the mic, and but she's nice in the ring. So I think at the moment she probably has the role she should have. Darrell, anything else this week?
My last thing for you guys would be this. I like the match between Isaiah Swerve Scott and Jake Atlas.
Yep.
So I like what they're doing. I guess they're building Swerve up to be a contender or maybe get a match before TakeOver or something like that. And I like how they tied Jake Atlas in to Jake Drake Maverick, because I still think the end game is for Jake Maverick to get that title shot and win it. And I like how they played off of it, because he really haven't had that true one-on-one match, that culmination. So I like where they're going. How do you guys like that in the build?
All right, so Swerve and Atlas. This was, for me, kind of a confounding match, because I liked a lot of the spots, but it was a spot fest, don't get me wrong. I greatly preferred the Swerve and Gargano match to this. And Gargano is Gargano. He's got a lot of years under his belt. I get it. But I think a lot of this match was cutesy in some ways. And sometimes it was too much, and sometimes it was the right amount. There were a couple of really, really sweet spots here. I'll just say I'm interested to hear what you guys thought. Swerve over Atlas in 956. I definitely agree. Swerve is being elevated to be at that championship level. It makes sense for him to be the first to really go after, I still want to say Phantasma, Escobar, because he's the only person who's beat him even now in a singles match. So that does make sense. I will tell you, I miss Legado del Fantasma when they're not on. I really was bummed that they weren't on when Swerve was introduced. And then I heard, it wasn't even the music. I saw somebody run on with the red, and I wasn't even paying attention to the music. And I was like, oh, it's going to be Mendoza or DJ Z. That's what I was hoping for, just to get that act on the screen. But that's not what it was. Swerve did go over Atlas in 9:56, Tom.
So, yeah, I mean, same thing as you regarding the match. I thought that they went for cutesy high spots too much, and there were a few of them where they had, for these two guys, uncharacteristic miscommunications, which made them a little janky, them being the spots. So, I was just surprised that two guys who I really like a lot for their wrestling acumen didn't seem to have an instant chemistry in NXT here. But I ultimately just like that Swerve is being featured. Last week I was worried. Of course, I detailed the other worries that I had that were completely waved away when Darrell, you enlightened me to the fact that what they were introducing into Swerve's backstory, at least I was saying new character, but it only got brought up once by Morrow this week. So I think it's more of just a backstory like they did the package on Bronson Reed tonight. Darrell enlightened me that that actually is a part of his life, and having a vocational dream and striving to achieve it is completely different than a wrestling company saying that you need something added to your character, which Swerve doesn't. And all that they seem to see is the color of your skin, because they assign you something that is stereotypical for your race. So that's what I was criticizing last week, and it's clearly a non-issue. One of the other things that worried me was that it seemed like they were only doing that video package on Swerve to legitimize him going up against I was trying to wave Phantasma out of my mind as well, Escobar, and obviously losing. And Swerve, of course, he still will lose that match, but he's somebody who we've said again and again and again we believe in so much that the fact that they are taking more time to build him up, even if this is, and in most likelihood it is, the only match that they're going to give him to enhance him on the way to that loss, it's at least something more of a feature for this extremely talented dude. So even though the match wasn't great, I'm still glad it happened.
Nate, on that match.
So I want to go back and watch that match rewatch the match, because I don't remember seeing any miscues or mistimes with them.
I thought it was pretty sloppy.
Admittedly, obviously I'm writing the hits and misses, and I did have a couple things that were distracting me at the beginning of the show, so that might be why I missed it. But I don't remember seeing anything. I definitely agree that it was certainly spot festy, and I know there's a lot of times where I'm not high on just a spot fest. But I don't know, for some reason tonight I was fine with it. I think it just depends on my mood, to be completely honest with you. Tonight I don't know. I was digging it. But now I don't want to sit here and praise it if I missed something. So now I'm like, I got to go back and rewatch this thing.
Well, all right. There was a couple of other matches. Well, we don't really have to cover Ever Rise and Imperium. That was just an angle to get to where we got. I did think that it was odd that, the announcers ever so briefly kind of promoted Ever Rise as kind of being in a crossroads in their career, and they were going to take things a little more seriously. And it was all, it basically seemed like maybe an excuse to just make them now babyface jobbers. I don't know. It was just something they said, and then nothing changed in the match, which they lost very, very quickly. Definitely have talked already about Roddy and Gargano, but we didn't really talk about the match. 12:54, Gargano over Strong. We also got the Ridge Holland video package. I believe that I'm the only 100%er on NXT UK, so I can say Ridge got a pretty sustained push there. He had not lost any singles matches, and he was starting to get into some singles feuds.
at the time that the pandemic happened. The very last new match before the pandemic was a number one contender's Battle Royal, and he made it down to, I want to say, final four. It was final four or final six. They definitely like him. He had not lost any singles matches. And I don't know where he was headed, but I think that this is a really interesting addition to the roster. He is a strong style guy through and through. I think that'll be some fun stuff. If they want to throw him in there against Thatcher, they might not survive it. Or Ridge against Oni. Oh, man, oh, man. Nate, on anything, if there was Strong and Gargano or anything about Ridge?
Yeah, Ridge, he's not somebody that I necessarily am super, super familiar with. I've heard the name, but, like Kelly just said, he's the only 100%er on NXT UK. If I had to take a guess as to when I watched it last, it might be around, like, TakeOver Blackpool. Like, I'm trying to remember. But, I don't have a whole lot to say on him other than what I did see in the vignette. I pulled up a couple things on YouTube between, that vignette and now. And I like what I see. So I would agree. The first thing I thought of, being a big Oni Lorcan guy, was, Ridge Holland and Oni Lorcan. So that could be fun. That could be fun. The Gargano-Roddy match, I certainly liked it. It was so to start the match off, they did a lot. It was a lot of mat wrestling and things like that, which I'm a big fan of. Talked about it before. Just said I was an Oni Lorcan guy. I was cool with that. It was when they booked it originally. And I know obviously we talked a little bit tonight about Roddy got he got some cheers last week. You're kind of being booked as a bit of a tweener. But when they originally booked the match, I was kind of thinking to myself, heel versus heel. I wonder how this is going to be. Is Roddy going to end up swinging? I kind of felt like Roddy was probably going to end up swinging a little bit face here, just kind of just the nature of the way Undisputed Era has been going lately, especially Roddy. Just in that whole feud with Dexter Lumis, he was still the heel. But he was a very sympathetic heel in that whole thing. So I kind of feel like that started to play into, this little bit of a Undisputed Era face turn, especially for Roddy. I shouldn't even say face turn, kind of a soft face turn, tweener turn, whatever you want to call it. The match itself was great. Exactly what I would expect out of these guys. I feel like Gargano probably was the right guy to go over. Overall it was a big thumbs up for me.
Yeah. I thought it was nice. When they booked Roddy and Gargano, I think we just all naturally have very high hopes. But this was these guys on like running on half speed or 60% speed.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was, it was 13 minutes. Four of those were on a commercial. So, we got what we got. What I will say about the match that I really liked is that Gargano won it with one final beat. I like that wins sometimes. I like any time a guy has multiple finishers, and sometimes you can win over certain members of the cast with a certain finisher, but you can't beat certain wrestlers with the wrong finisher because they can fight it off or because it's just not on their level. Like Roddy can fight off the Gargano escape in so many different ways. It makes sense that Gargano finishes him with an impact finisher, like one final beat. I just love the multiple finisher thing. Tom.
I was going to say, yes, that's because one final beat is categorized as an impact finish, and Roddy's character has a -1 to impact moves or something like that. Anyway, this was just those two guys having fun out there, which is fine. I particularly liked how Tom Phillips used it as an opportunity to further bolster Reed's win, saying, well, if this is the level of competition out of these guys, just imagine how great Bronson Reed is if he managed to beat them. So I thought that was definitely a plus, utilizing that moment. Nothing wrong with Roddy losing, even with what appeared to already be, if not a character change, like a giveaway of the alignment change with the crowd reaction. because him losing was basically the catalyst for O'Reilly in the back revving up the troops, basically. So yeah, that's fine. Especially, you know, if you're going to make a significant change with an act, you can get some more out of them by having them take some L's before you make that change, because then the change basically wipes those away. In many cases, anyway, it's all circumstantial. And just be safe, Kyle. Be safe, everybody, but be safe, Kyle. You were staying away for good reason. Ridge Holland, yeah. I was very high on what I was seeing out of Luke Menzies, the jobber, before he was rebranded Ridge Holland and went over to NXT UK. I bumped into him a couple times, and my girlfriend thinks he's hot, so I have to be careful. But you know, whatever. He is pretty good looking. He looks like a more beefy Chris Pratt. I've seen him behind the plexiglass on a couple of Raws and SmackDowns, so he was obviously stateside, and it's like, well, you may as well use him then if he's willing to work and he's not restricted by a travel ban. Then heck yeah, get him on the show. And no, I haven't seen his work in NXT UK. Just like Nate, you know, I'll drop in for the pay-per-views and catch myself up on the TV. And no matter how I end up feeling about the pay-per-view, it's just it's a very hard product for me to keep up on. Just all these very same looking guys just going out and working the same style matches. It's very difficult to remain engaged in. Since I don't cover it on a podcast, but
I will say most of those samey looking guys have kind of found themselves slipping down the card, and the top of the card is a lot more vibrant at the moment than it would have been. Well, I say at the moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It was as good a time as any ever to get into the thing.
Well, fair enough. But yeah, what I'm getting at is just that, like, what I really liked about Luke Menzies was probably during a time when he was trusted as like a 1 to 2 minute guy for a 1 to 2 minute match. But maybe they didn't want him for the 3 to 5 minute match. Maybe they didn't want him for the 7 to 10 minute match yet. Maybe he was still working on that in his developmental phase. But if he has shown more of that in NXT UK, I simply haven't seen it, but I am eager to see more from him because I saw so much in him in those job outings.
He was on his way up. He probably hadn't worked any matches that were more than 5 to 6 minutes long. That's about as long as he had gone because he wasn't yet facing high level competition. I think, oh, what's the one who's got half an ear? I don't remember his name all the time. I don't remember anybody's name all the time if I don't have to talk about him on the podcast. But he was just starting to get to where he was in honest-to-goodness feuds at the time when they were stopping. So that's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. We have two more emails. Also, we didn't really talk about Bronson Reed's origin story video. I thought it was nice, touching in a way that his girlfriend believed in him that much. I thought that was a nice touch and the right angle for this video. The video gave me the feeling that Reed would win, even though at this point when the video was on, we still didn't even know who the second person in the match was. I really think they might be going all the way with Reed, but ask me again in about 3 weeks, folks. We also got a couple of emails. This is from Jack Argyle. Hey, guys. Hope you're all safe and well. My question for you today is, who is the biggest miss for you guys who's left the NXT for the main roster? I feel like Nakamura has to be up there with the hype he had coming in. Who has been the biggest hit who left NXT for the main roster? Could you say Flair or Lynch? Maybe Seth? Thanks, guys. Stay safe. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. Yeah, I think there have been quite a few hits at this point. So much of the roster have been hits. Depends on how you define a hit. I mean, Elias has gotten a lot of TV time when he didn't get much on NXT. He was always going to be more successful on the main roster. Nakamura as a miss also is, you know, I don't know if you can call it a miss, because it's not like he didn't get opportunity. He won a Royal Rumble that is more elite than the championship belt is. More guys win the belt than win Royal Rumbles. So I don't know that it's a miss. I think we expected a lot. And as somebody who has seen, like, who has watched Nakamura 2013 and saw all those matches he was having during the G1 Climax and everything, I just say, how is he not there? But he's not on the same level, and he was wrestling strong style there all the time, and he still works strong style, and sometimes it mixes with these guys and sometimes it doesn't. Biggest hit, I find it very hard not to say that it's Becky, because I think Becky is the one we wish had been. I was a little annoyed that she didn't get a run in NXT just because it seemed like there was no room for her. And I felt extremely vindicated to a very far level of schadenfreude at the fact that she ended up being at the top, even though her wrestling didn't catch that of like Charlotte or Sasha's. I thought that she is wonderful at the act, and she gets into certain aspects of being a professional wrestler than just about anybody. She just gets it more than pretty much anybody. Tom?
Yeah, at first when I read the question, obviously this was cleared up by the time I was done reading it, but like halfway through reading it, I thought Jack was asking about acts that flamed out of NXT and didn't even make it to the main roster, and my knee-jerk reaction was Sami Callihan. But
yeah,
hits and misses that have actually made it to the main roster and are... I mean, there are so many names to sift through. I think that Jack really nailed it when he said Becky, Charlotte, and Seth. It's kind of a toss-up between them, and it like you said, Kelly, it really comes down to how you define hit and miss. And I, you know, on any given week, I might try to define it differently for the sake of creatively answering the question. I'm kind of trying to look at the main roster careers holistically and trying to estimate what the floor and the ceiling for each wrestler was coming out of NXT. And so that kind of leads me to a coin flip between Charlotte and Seth. And that's just because Becky did take a little while to catch the fire that we knew she always could. And I'm right there with you regarding opinion of her. I completely echo everything you said about her. But Charlotte and Seth have pretty much always been significant since hitting the main roster, and they have stayed that way extremely consistently. They've always felt important, and part of me also wants to throw Roman Reigns out there, but you know that comes with the huge caveat that even though he's main evented 4 consecutive WrestleManias, it also was much more company pushed rather than fan pushed, and his presence in NXT was almost more of a technicality. He was really more of an FCW guy who just showed his face like 2 or 3 times in NXT. I think Kelly and I, of course, will be covering that coming up back whenever he does end up showing up here and there. And as for the misses, again, I'm really trying to narrow it down because there are so many names. So Tyler Breeze comes to mind, but the Fashion Police was really entertaining, even if it was closer to his floor than his ceiling. So the two that I ended up going towards they're just coincidentally, Axel isn't with the company anymore. I'm pretty sure he's not. I'm pretty sure he was one of the COVID releases. But it's just coincidental that they ended up tagging together. But I feel that Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas showed a much higher ceiling. Yeah. Curtis more for wrestling acumen and Bo more for character work, a much higher ceiling than what they were ever allowed to show on the main roster. And I know Axel got that big first night against Triple H, and he did have a little intercontinental title run with the sentimentality of having won it on Father's Day. And Bo did have an undefeated streak for a little while where he was doing that wildly entertaining victory lap thing. I just adored that. But then it was just thrown away in a meaningless loss to R-Truth. And I feel like after the very, very brief introduction to the main roster of those two guys, they wrestled pretty much at their floor for the whole rest of the time that they were on TV. And Bo is still signed, but I mean, when was the last time we saw him?
Yeah, and they were tag champs together, but that was together, right? The B team.
Did they win the belt? I mean, it's not
yeah,
like
they did.
The B team were the champions. Yeah.
Okay.
For
team
like
won.
2 months. Yeah.
Yep.
Nate.
Yeah. So for hits and misses here, I first name that came to mind, and I mean, it's not just because he wrote it in his email. Jack wrote it in his email. Was Nakamura. Now, Kelly, you make some really good points as to why, you know, it may not be defined a miss for Nakamura. But I don't know. I just felt like, for me, Shinsuke, he was just, you know, I never saw him in New Japan, right? I've seen some of his matches now in New Japan, but when he debuted in NXT, I was like, this guy's on another, like, he's on another level. He's in another world. You know, when, like, I've seen him live now twice, two different NXT house shows that I went to. And, like, it was just that main roster, big star feel, you know? And I always thought he was going to be, you know, a WWE or Universal Champion. You know, he still may, but I feel like the time's kind of running out for that, you know, with his age and just kind of his positioning on the card. So I personally do feel like Jack is kind of on the money there with Nakamura. And then I was actually going to bring up Roman Reigns, not necessarily because I think he was a he's certainly not my favorite wrestler or anything by any stretch, but you know, obviously he did swing through NXT, and I mean, he's essentially been, you know,
only swung through, though.
Well,
I mean, he was there for weeks.
No, I mean, I know that, but I mean, he still swung through NXT. So I was going to bring that up, but then you brought up Bo Dallas. And I think that's a better name. I think that's a better name because I adored what he was doing as the NXT champion. You know, he was the champion when I came into NXT. My very first NXT, I believe, was NXT Arrival. Was the first time I ever watched, because I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was also when the network launched, and that's kind of why I started watching NXT.
You are not mistaken. That's correct.
Yep. Okay, cool. So that was, you know, that was really the first time I was introduced to Bo Dallas and all of that, and obviously he lost the belt that night to Neville, but you know, I went back and I watched some more of his work and stuff after that, and like I really, really liked what he was doing. And then, you know, like Tom said, he got to the main roster, he kind of continued that delusional shtick, and then it just kind of fell off. You know, the B team stuff, I want to say had its moments, and it did. There were a couple times where I really liked what, well, actually I think it was really more the Miztourage before they became the B team was really when I was enjoying what they were doing. So they were playing off the Miz really well. But you know, he just really, I mean, he's NXT champion, and he's never really done anything of note after getting called up. So, yeah, I think my two picks there would be Nakamura and Bo Dallas for misses anyway. For hits, like I said, I was going to be, you know, I was going to say Roman Reigns for hit, but I think, you know, really, it comes down to Becky Lynch, Seth, Charlotte. I'll even throw Sasha and Bailey in there. I really feel like those guys have been really the biggest names to come out of NXT. Maybe Kevin Owens, maybe Sami Zayn could be in that talk, but not Sami Zayn. I mean, he's certainly been somebody of note, but I wouldn't say he's been, you know, the best draw coming from NXT. But, you know, there's at least a few of the names I'd throw out there anyway.
All right, Jack, we thank you for that question. That's kind of fun. I know that we've done it in the past. Tom and I have, going way back, the couple of years we've been doing this. But it's always fun to debate. Tom, Nate, in a way, you're both winners. In a more correct way, Tom is the winner. Okay, so
yay!
We got one more email.
Kelly, shut up, Kelly.
No, you can't deliver it like I can. It's just I'll get you there. I'll get you there. I promise. Todd.
Oh, I just thought I have my own podcast.
Todd Dodtell, who recently filled in and co-hosted on the show. He asked the question, where the hell has Chelsea Green been? She kicked Stone to the curb and has been MIA since. What's going on? Well, Todd, I think who cares? Where I think I so Tom, you follow everyone on Instagram. Do you know what's up with Chelsea Green?
Yeah, and I can't bear to follow Chelsea Green on Instagram. That is yeah, even some of these people who I have put on my, you know, what do I want to call it, my anti-mask shit list, I still follow them just to keep up with them. I don't like any of their posts anymore. You know, I'm sure that they notice and they're very hurt by it. But yeah, Chelsea, I just cannot bear to follow it. But I did look at her Instagram after Todd submitted the question just to see if there was anything. And it's still just her at the beach, just like always, just. It's just her at the beach. Yeah, I think what happened to Chelsea Green, I think her character, it was a mercy killing. I don't really think that. I just there's a slight chance that they were just like, all right, we've got something with Stone, but we've got to move it to somebody else. Holy crap. I don't think that's the case, though. I think that she's probably just, you know, the rumors are probably more or less true that she got the call up. But like I was saying about Dijakovic last week, I think that removing my opinion of Chelsea Green from the situation, it is advantageous to have a gap between writing someone off of NXT and introducing them to the main roster. So you can handle it in a narratively intriguing way on NXT's end of things, even though they chose to do Chelsea Green's write-off in a .com exclusive, so it wasn't even actually on the program. But then you wait until there's actually a spot for them to come in on the main roster, rather than just the main roster, as we've seen so many times, they're just like, okay, we want to call this person up, and then NXT is like, oh, crap, and then the main roster plugs them in and they have to feud with Dolph Ziggler for 3 months. I think that even though Chelsea Green, I don't feel is an act worth, is a talent level worth worrying that much about, I still think it's the right approach to take in general.
Indeed. And I think it's that simple too. A call up that was made with intent and now she seems to be lost in the shuffle already, which is a hell of a place to be, but we have seen that happen. I feel like Ruby Riott has treaded water since the second she was there. It is definitely something that happens. And if they want anything out of her at all, they might as well find the right spot first. Okay, well, that is our show. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. Listen to the VIP podcast, NXT 8 years back. It is a blast. I'm kind of regretful that I don't get to do a show tomorrow because we've already banked two, and therefore we've already done the one for this Saturday. But we are right now talking about the first ever tournament for the NXT Championship. Richie Steamboat was in it. Did you know that? If not, you should be doing a rewatch with us and listening to the old podcast. Tom, who are you?
Yep, at Tom Staup on Twitter. And since you took the 8 years back plug, and I echo that, Gold Rush tournament starts on Saturday. I will just mention that if you follow me on Twitter, you will get to follow one of the few people who actually likes, nay, loves what they are doing with the Asuka and Sasha Banks feud on the main roster. I think it has been excellent TV. So that is at Tom Staup is where you can get those kind of opinions.
Nate, who are you?
I write at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. And like I said earlier tonight, I write the NXT Hits and Misses, which typically drops on pwtorch.com either Thursdays or Fridays. And I'm going to go ahead and start hyping this now. Why not? So as you guys know, I take a look at RPGs and their therapeutic therapeutic benefits on my other podcast, the Deejcast, and my YouTube channel, Deejs and Dragons. And starting on not this Friday, but next Friday, for the next 6 weeks, we're going to be looking at the Worldwide Wrestling RPG. And that starts on Friday, the following Saturday, so next Saturday. Actually, Mr. Tom Staupe has joined me. It will be joining me on the Deejcast along with Mr. Zach Haydorn. Three of us, along with my other two co-hosts, are going to be talking mental health and pro wrestling. We've already actually banked the episode, and it was a hell of a conversation. So that's going to be dropping. I'll talk about it next week, too, remind you. But that'll be coming out in about a week and a half. So check it out when it does. Kelly's going to be joining me, too, talk some dice wrestling. And it's going to be a good time. We're going to be doing a bunch of wrestling and RPGs.
If you didn't think I was nerdy enough for what I do to this podcast, I will be talking about wrestling federations that I created and rolled with dice as a kid and still sometimes do. All right, folks, that is it. And we will see you in 7.
Shut up, Kelly.